Hi, my name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on a very interesting topic, government contracts. Government contracts can appear to be a daunting opportunity for collection agencies, but they don't have to be. They offer significant growth prospects for any company willing to make the necessary investments in identifying the right opportunity and securing a contract. We're fortunate to have Nick Bernardo from MyGovWatch to share his insights and details about this topic with us today. This webinar is being generously sponsored by MyGovWatch. You'll get the chance to hear more about them during our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the armed industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the armed industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and it's a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speaker. Nick Bernardo is and has been president of MyGovWatch.com, the DBA of Net Gain Marketing, since 2003. The MyGovWatch.com portal is the company's flagship service offering and serves some of the best known large and small companies in the collections industry today. The 2018 relaunch of the site for the first time allows anyone to create a free account with pay-as-you-go options or to access detailed information on the government contract on an unlimited basis. His 20-year career includes broad-based experience in business-to-business marketing, information services development, professional services marketing, third-party reselling, and nonprofit fundraising. He's also the managing member of FedCetera, a business development organization, as the term is used in federal regulations, that works with companies seeking to participate in federal contracting and subcontracting opportunities in collections. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Nick. We encourage everybody to ask questions, and Nick will take them as he's giving his presentation. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded, and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. With that, let me introduce Nick Bernardo to begin his presentation. Nick?
Thank you so much, Mike. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Mike is always kind enough to share with us a little bit about who's on the line with us. And so I'm always happy to hear that some of our existing clients are on the line. That's always cool because, you know, it's just a touch point where we can help clients who are always looking to navigate the site and find things on the site. It's a reminder opportunity of what's on the site for existing clients. It's always interesting to me that we have .edu or .gov folks on demos and teleseminars like this. So welcome to you all and everyone else. We'd love to be working with you in some shape or form. So very diverse audience today. You all have one thing in common. You are interested in government contracting, and most of you are interested in winning government contracts or more of them, and even a higher percentage of them, to be very specific. And what we want to do, we want to find ways to reduce the amount of red tape. And what do we mean by red tape? In this context, well, there's a very small percentage of companies in your industry that actually compete for government contracts. As we know, there's just so much consumer debt out there that companies that are in collections, for the most part, the majority of them tend to stay away from government contracts. However, that is continuing to change as more and more government agencies are putting their debt out for servicing contracts to hire collection agencies for a percentage of dollars collected, not unlike any bank or finance company. But there's a tremendous opportunity to waste a tremendous amount of time pursuing government contracts. So by cutting through the red tape, what we really mean is shortening the amount of time that you need to know which contracts to bid on so that you're making the most efficient use of your time. And the only way you can do that in an information economy is to have the right information at your fingertips. So everything that we're going to look at over the next 45 minutes or so is going to be public information that you yourself have access to and that you could obtain and aggregate for your business purpose in any of the 24 niches within government collections that we track on our website. And the way that you are able to cut through the red tape is by doing research through what's called the Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, and that's at the federal level, or in different states, states will have different state level laws for the same thing. In Florida, they call it the Sunshine Law. In Pennsylvania, the Right to Know Law. And there are different versions throughout the country, but they all basically say the same thing. If you are a citizen, and in most cases, a citizen anywhere in the state, although there are a few exceptions, sometimes you have to be a citizen of that state, but it's, I think there's only four states like that. You are able to obtain documents about government activity as long as you follow the right process, contact the right people, and in some cases, write a large enough check for their time and for copies of the documents themselves. So the researching aspect of cutting through the red tape helps you understand enough about government contracts at the contract level so that you can start to make really good decisions about what to bid on and why, and even more importantly, what to avoid bidding on and why. The other red tape, or the other side of the red tape coin, as I would call it, is bid writing. So to respond to most of these RFPs, although there are some outliers that may take a couple of weeks to put together or a day or less to put together, by and large, most bid responses for service industries are going to take you 2 to 4 days of dedicated time or total person hours, let's call it, to put a bid together that has a reasonable chance of winning. So by researching the contracts that you want for open records, by doing the research yourself or using a tool like ours, you can be in a position to pick the right contract to bid on so that the very expensive time you spend writing bids, whether it be you or if you have a person who's writing the bids in your office, it certainly will help you cut through the red tape. So the goal ultimately is to narrow down the universe of contracts that are out for bid and identify only the ones that you can win. And I just want to tell this story of some research that we did a few years ago. There's a press release out there somewhere about this, where we looked at 100 contract awards, and this is real data. And we tried to figure out a way to determine how many out of 100 were a real opportunity. So what we did was we looked at the results of 100 procurements in collections, and we found out that 2/3 of them, about 67 of them, were real opportunities. And how do we define that? A real opportunity, the way that we conducted that research, was one where there was no incumbent, so they hired someone for a service that had never been outsourced before, or they replaced at least one incumbent, they replaced the incumbent or replaced at least one incumbent, or they at least added a vendor to a contract that had existing vendors. So we found that 2/3 of those were real opportunities by that measure. So how do you narrow it down even more? And that's really the important part, because there's a common misconception with government contracts that either the low bidder is the only company that ever wins, or they only pick the local guy down the street, or only large companies can win them. And so as it turns out, all intelligence is local. And what I mean by that is it doesn't matter what you believe overall about these contracts. It only matters what you know about the specific contract in front of you to help you make decisions about what you could win or could not win. So what we're going to do throughout this demo is just look at examples of public information so that everyone understands what is available to them. And we're going to look at some real examples of those. And by the way, before I get into these examples, I just want to say that questions are great. I like questions during these teleseminars because it just gives a little bit of a natural break of me simply talking in monologue fashion to the people on the line. So if you have a question, please type it right in. And if I can answer it on the fly, that's even better. Although I will take them at the end as well. So the research that you're able to do, we're going to look at one contract. We'll look at several, but the first one we'll look at is a state contract with the state of Colorado. And this is something that's been outsourced for several years. It's been in procurement off and on probably for more than 20 years. So if we look, we can see what documents we've obtained about this contract. And here's the RFP. You can get that by creating a free account on our site. No big deal. But the hard part, and the part that you really want to do if you want to do business with the state of Colorado for this contract, is you want to do an open records request and obtain documents explaining how they picked, who they picked, in 2015, for example. So this is just a list of the documents we were able to obtain through open records in 2015. And what you're able to do when you ask for these documents through open records or FOIA, and I assume everyone can see my screen, Mike will tell me if they can, you are able to get, for example, summary sheets showing every vendor that bid on this particular contract in 2015, and very detailed information about what the evaluators saw in their bid and what the evaluators thought of their bid. So you can see a list of the companies that bid, for example, and their total score. But then as you go further, what you find out is you can get information about your company specifically. So if you're Southwest Credit, you can see what they thought of your bid. And at the individual level, you can see what Laura, Valerie, and Regina thought of your bid. So this particular example, there's not a lot of granular information, although the numbers are helpful. But as you go through, you can start to understand what did they think of Virtuoso versus Southwest Credit, and right on down the line. And I think this document's about 21 pages of very specific scoring data about what they thought for each of these companies in their bids in 2015. So then what you can do as a next step, if you obtain these documents through open records, is study what did the companies that won or that scored highly in their in a different category, what did they actually say in their proposal? And so the winning proposal, and actually all proposals with some exceptions, are public records and they are available to you. So you can study on one hand the scoring to see why did Integral score so high in methodology or in technology and just see the raw numbers, and then go and read what they actually say about their technology and how that might meet the needs of the state of Colorado. And so the typical FOIA request, it may take several months to complete, and it may take you 5 to 10 times of following up with someone to get them to send you the documents, you know, after you send them a check for a couple hundred dollars maybe. But all of this information is at your fingertips. And these documents not only contain information that might be helpful to figure out why this particular company won a contract with the state of Colorado, but they provide a very specific data set about individual companies, where they operate, how big they are. And so you may be a casual competitor of this company and might just want to know a little bit about them. Or for your biggest competitors, to the extent they bid on government contracts, all this stuff is out there. There are vendors in the industry where we might have 100 proposals over 10 years. So you can start to understand how companies are changing over time simply by seeing what they're putting into their bids. So in this particular case, we were able to get a copy of each contract. It looks like there were two of them, and a copy of the winning proposals along with the scoring. So the contracts themselves might be helpful in terms of narrowing down what you bid on. You might think this contract looks great. You have company or you have clients in Colorado, you have an office in Colorado, but if you had a copy of the contract, you might see something in it and say, you know what? They want insurance from us that will double or triple our insurance rate. We're just not going to do that. So instead of spending 4 days or 5 days writing the bid, the public information at your fingertips convinced you not to bid on the contract, and that has value in terms of saving you staff time in developing the bid. So as a second example of that, we're going to look at a contract that's an RFP that's out now for Houston Community College. And we'll take a look and see what we have here. Here's some documents. It looks like this started. This was out for bid late last year, but they're still within the bid process. And the last time this was out for bid was back in 2013. So what's also interesting is in this case, we have the scoring and the evaluations, and we'll just take a quick look at those. And it looks like this is a 12-page document. And it's very similar to the last one we looked at. It's giving you different categories so you can see how different companies shook out in terms of where they scored. But what's also very interesting is on this one, we were able to get a copy of the actual pricing. So most of these companies are still in business. Most of them are still highly active in this niche. So if you're interested in this particular contract, you have some insight on what each company thought the contract was worth in terms of fee to them, and you're able to see that at the company level. And that's typically something we are able to get. It's not 100% of the time, but in most cases, if you ask for a sheet that shows all the bidders and the prices submitted by all bidders, typically that is something they're able to provide.
That's an updated sheet, Nick? Sorry, or is that one on a previous contract?
So that's on a previous contract, but that gives you insight on what did people think about what this contract was worth in terms of how they would price it going back to 2013. And then you can look at the business details that we're gathering, and you can start to understand, has their average balance gone up? Have the placement volumes gone up or gone down? And that might affect how you might price it. So you might see that the volume's gone up, that might affect the pricing one way, or the average balance has gone down, that might affect the pricing another way.
Sure. Got it.
Then we have, sometimes we come across information, let me just move this dashboard out, that'll do it. Okay, so then we have other contracting initiatives where the documents we're able to get through Open Records just give insight that is just very difficult to, it's hard to know what to do with some of these unless you read some of the things that are available through Open Records. And in this particular case, we were able to get, whenever a procurement is canceled, we try to get details on why they canceled the opportunity. And in this case, we were able to get cancellation correspondence. And this is just two pages of information explaining that there was no award, but specifically they're saying instead of awarding the contract back in September, this would be September of 17, instead of awarding that contract at that time, they were looking at partnering with the court system and piggybacking off of their contract or having an RFP that combined the two needs into one opportunity. So it looks like that's what they intended to do. And they only had one vendor who was interested in submitting a proposal at that time. So then another document we were able to obtain went into greater detail about, who was pursuing this opportunity, what were they telling them, and, what are the reasons why they should go out to bid now. And so it looks like they have come out for bid, and so you're able to see from these documents what was their strategy in the past and who are the likely bidders. Because within these documents, there are actual citations and emails from individual companies. So you should know that you're probably competing against a company by LJ Ross or professional finance company, because they're both mentioned in these emails that are subject to Open Records in Michigan. So that gives you a very good handle on, A, there wasn't that much interest in this procurement a year and a half ago, and B, if you are bidding on it, you're able to guess who you're bidding against, and that has intrinsic value. So we have a question, and I'm just going to pause and take this question. The question is, what value is there for being an agency that is a state or national veteran-owned business when submitting a bid? So that's a great question. As it turns out, there are probably only two places in the country where being a veteran has any relevance in a bid. And at the federal level, the federal government tracks or tries to divert 3% of their spending to disabled vets. And then separately, the Veterans Authority or the Veterans Department of Veterans, they have separate goals for veteran-owned companies. So that's at the federal level. And there's only a few contract initiatives within the federal government, significant ones anyway. But then as it turns out, the state of California has contracting preferences for disabled veterans if you get certified through their programs. So thank you for that question.
If I could interrupt and add, along with veterans, aren't there also special categories or awards for businesses that are owned by minorities or women as well?
Yes, there are. And that's often the reason why companies pursue government contracts. They might be woman-owned or minority-owned, or they might think, well, I'm a vet, you know, I should go for this. The fact that you can qualify as vet or woman-owned or minority-owned, that's not in and of itself enough of a reason to get involved in government contracting, because often while there are preferences for those kinds of companies to participate, they are not significant enough in the scoring of the bids. So most of those contracts, federally or at the local level in states and cities and counties, most of them do not ultimately go to companies that have those special designations. Now, I will tell you, at the federal level, they have disabled vet, HUD zone, which is based on geography, woman-owned and disadvantaged. So there are set-asides for those groups at the federal level. At the local level, certain jurisdictions have better set-aside programs than others, or more established programs. So the state of New York, Cook County, Texas has some for HUD zone. So certain states and cities, you're more likely to have that be successful if you're located in those places and you have those designations. But I would say that by and large, most companies that have done well in government contracting, most of them, although there are exceptions, have not succeeded because of that status. It's because they were good at what they did. So,
makes sense.
Yep. So we talked a little bit about how pricing details are available. And I wanted to look at another opportunity that's out for bid, and that is the University of Kentucky. And there's always a lot of interest in our industry in getting into student loans and knowing what it takes to get into student loan collections. And so companies that may not have a lot of experience in that, this contract is due, the bids are due on February 20th. So what's useful and what you're able to do if you collect enough of this information is compare pricing in different jurisdictions for the same type of debt to try to see or predict what pricing might be. So in the case of this University of Kentucky contract, we know it's for secondary accounts, but we don't really have a history on this one. Maybe there isn't a history to be had. It could be a new contracting initiative. So what we're able to do in our vendor center, and again, it's public information so you can get access to it, is you are able to look up contracts that meet criteria that you designate. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at January 1st, 2018 through December 31st, 2018. And let's look at those. And what you're able to see is that pricing for secondary student loan contracts comes up almost immediately. So in this particular case, Account Control Technology, they bid 25% on secondary student loans. This was with the state of Alabama last June. And so you're able to get very granular with searches like this, at least on our site. So one minute you could look up, contracts west of the Mississippi where it's a utility contract and the average balance is between $500 and $1,000. And the next minute you could say, well, tell me what are healthcare self-pay contracts in Texas? How are they being priced, in the last 6 months? So having access and knowing how current bids are likely to be priced by different companies is intrinsically valuable. So you're able to research specific competitors and look up specific companies. So if I look up Account Control Technology, for example, the system will return to me any rate we have in our system, and the icons show whether they were awarded at that rate. University of North Dakota looks like they bid 22%. So you can either research specific companies, or you can research specific classes of debt or attributes of that debt and say, well, looks like utility first placement is between 17 and 18% in the last year. And that may help you with pricing a bid that is out for bid today. So I'm just going to stop there and just see if there's questions about pricing and how to access that kind of data.
while people are typing any questions they have, let me ask you this. It seems like, you know, like you said, all this information is out there, is publicly available, but coming to MyGovWatch seems to, you know, would save a tremendous amount of time at the very least in terms of trying to, you know, sort of track all this stuff down. Is that right?
Yeah, and that's the value proposition of the site. So if you're a tiny company that really only cares about one or two government contracts and you're sure of that, you could actually still have a free account on the site and offload some of that research to us. But the smaller the company, the less likely they would make significant use of it. Once companies are really in growth mode and they're interested in looking at different markets, it makes sense to start using it. But that does not preclude your own research. We sign up clients all the time who say, wow, I didn't know this tool was even available. We used to do all this research ourselves. But dollar for dollar, it just doesn't make sense to keep doing it if you know that you can have us do it based on how we price it.
And then the information that's, you know, for example, the stuff that we're seeing on the screen now, this pricing information, this is what was bid, what was accepted, what's in the contract, right? This is these are the actual terms. There's no chance that the numbers have changed or are different from what we're seeing here, is there?
Great question. So the reality is we are databasing price quotes, right? So what we're also doing is the system knows that Account Control Technology won this contract with the University of North Dakota. So we should be able to have that track back to a document, because sometimes what will happen is there will be one set of numbers in the bid, but then a second set of numbers ends up in the contract just through negotiation. So, and I'm sure it's here somewhere. I mean, there's just so many documents. But you can look at the actual contract at that point to compare what was submitted in the proposal to what was in the contract itself, if that makes sense.
Yep.
Another opportunity in tapping into government contracts or information that you can get through public records has to do with the dates within contracts that would help you understand when you should start your sales process. So there are two kinds of government contracts. There are single purchase contracts or quotes where a government agency might be buying a dump truck or a single purchase item such as that. But whenever you have a service contract where they have the need on a continuing basis, like trash pickup or debt collection or accounting services or legal services, it creates a scenario where you can almost predict when they should have their next procurement action. Because if you have the contract and you know when, you know the date that it was out for bid last time, you should know based on those dates when they would have or when they would be likely to have their next procurement. So what we do on our site, and you can keep a spreadsheet on this, is we database all of these dates so that you can almost predict when the bids will be coming out. So let's say, for example, and let's just look at one example here. This is the state of Florida, and this looks like their SunPass program, so this must be toll violations or something of that nature. So we know that last time it was out for bid, it was released on February 11th of 2009. The bid due date was March of 2009. They expected it to start in May. And so by knowing the term on the contract and the options available to it, we know if they did not exercise the options, it would have been out in 2014. But if they did, which in most cases they do, it should be coming out any time now to enable them to get new contracts in place by May or June or July or whenever whenever those contracts expire. They don't want a lapse in place, even if they are replacing the vendor. And so if you know which contracts are likely to be coming out, let's say this coming June, and you have extensive sales traveling or salespeople or you yourself are traveling, and you know you're going to be traveling a lot in June, you could very easily say, well, I'm going to be in Florida anyway, or I'm going to be in Chicago anyway. Let's see which contracts are expected to be coming out, and let me try to see what meetings I can get. And then even before you get those meetings, you could look at all the documents that are available in the public record and say, well, I could go to Chicago and get a meeting with this person, but I wouldn't want that contract anyway. And then you might identify two others within 50 miles of Chicago where you say, you know what, these look like they are coming out for bid and they look like things where I would like to try to get a meeting. So now you're not just calling on them saying, hey, do you want to buy collection services? You're calling on them and saying, hey, I know that you hired Harrison Harris in 2008 and you've been doing business with them for 10 years. How's that working out? Did they increase your liquidation over the 8% that I know you were getting in 2008? And it just creates an opportunity where the research is so compacted and at your fingertips, it becomes a lot easier to have that conversation, especially on a cold call with a prospect. Because once the bid comes out, the cone of silence goes up and you're no longer able to make traditional sales calls. You're simply responding to the RFP at that point. And we'll just look at a little bit more about these contracts. Let me just pull up the state of Florida example. And let's just see what we know about that. So it looks like Alliance One Teleperformance won this contract in 2009. And it looks like we have 47 pages of information here. And the first thing that jumps off the bat or that jumps off the screen to me is that there was only one responsive proposal. It looks like Alliance One was awarded the contract by default. They're a wonderful company, they use our site, but it looks like the other four companies simply submitted a non-responsive proposal. So then you have 46 other pages of information about this that, that you can use to try to learn more about how this or how the other companies scored before they were determined to be non-responsive. As another example, we'll take a look at Wayne, New Jersey. And several years ago, they passed an ordinance here in New Jersey, and that's where our office is, that allowed court districts to outsource court debt and add a fee onto those debts. So over the last several years, we've seen probably a couple hundred of those court procurements for debt collection come out. And this one looks like it's coming up. So if you dig into the details on this one, let's see who has this one. Looks like Duncan Solution has it since 2016. And then because we have more history on this one, we can even see that Duncan Solutions has this since at least 2012. So they've had it for going on 7 years. And different documents you get through Open Records have different levels of detail. I looked at this one earlier, and this one is actually a very good example. So you have very specific citations to names of people, and a lot of these people tend to stay in government jobs if they're able to get government jobs. I wouldn't be surprised if all three of these people are still in the same roles with Wayne Township here in New Jersey. So you have the names of people you could contact. And they go in a little bit of detail about what kinds of attributes they were looking for in the company that they wanted to provide. It looks like two of the six bids were disqualified. Four of them were evaluated. And they give a detailed breakdown of each of the companies that they evaluated. And professional account management is Duncan Solutions. So they ultimately pick Duncan Solutions based on the opinion that Duncan Solutions had at that time a lot of New Jersey municipal court experience and a lot of familiarity with the laws surrounding that topic here in New Jersey. So you might take from that, well, let's just see, you know, if we can get a meeting in Wayne, New Jersey, or you might take from that, well, they've been doing this for 9 years. Maybe this would be an uphill battle for our company. So you're able to not only see what's happening with bids today and use public information to better identify which are actual targets, and you're able to look into the future to see what opportunities are on the horizon and make faster, better decisions about which ones are good fits or possible good fits of your company. So Mike, I can tell you that the last time we went through this content, there were many more questions during the demo.
I've got
a few. That's okay. Yeah.
I've got a few. I'm curious. There is a tremendous amount of data that you've shown us, and I'm sure that's just the tip of the iceberg to what's available on the site, and that's awesome. I love data. I'm sure to some people, though, it might be overwhelming. So I'm curious if you had an idea or a few thoughts about if someone's sort of coming into this for the first time or coming to the site for the first time, how would you recommend they sort of approach this type of opportunity?
So let's just talk about the numbers in debt collection, because that, I think, is what everyone's interested on this call, but there may be some on this call that have other interests. But just focusing on that industry for a minute, there are about 250 to 300 debt collection procurements per year. And then if you add to that the upcoming opportunities for things that we know are 6 to 12 months out, in any given year, there could be 3 to 500 things that you might look at. So the main thing is try to focus on things where no one else has shown an interest in it. Every once in a while, we'll see bid results where there was only one bidder or they cancel it because they didn't receive a single bid. So companies that are trying to break into this market are generally going to want to bid on things that no one else is bidding on, or where pricing might be the driver. So you may not always want to win contracts based on being the low bid, but at least to get your foot in the door, that helps. Also, we're entering a period of the year where there's many, many more bids between the middle of January and Memorial Day than there are in the summer or as we get closer to the holidays at the end of the year. So a lot of times what happens is there are so many procurements out at one time that the big guys can't get to all of them, and they simply don't bid on all of them. So that creates an opportunity for smaller companies or companies that might be larger but don't have any experience in this space to pick one off, because no one can bid on every contract when there are so many open procurements out for bidding.
Go ahead.
No, you please.
No, I was going to say, is there any rhyme or reason to why there are opportunities or bids that or contracts that don't have any bids on it? Is that something that shouldn't necessarily scare people away?
Well, yes and yes. So typically, things that are tiny, very tiny, there will be no bidders. So it might be a very small town in New Jersey has ambulance debt, or a housing authority in the Midwest needs Section 8 rent collected. So they're just very small in nature, but if you need a reference, that's really the way to get started, because the Housing Authority of Gary, Indiana may not become your largest client ever, but it's certainly a reference if you want the state of Indiana contract the next year.
Does that help, sort of previous government collection experience when bidding on these type of contracts, either at the local, state, or federal level?
Absolutely. So by and large, people being what they are, they tend to score or rate companies higher if they have previous government experience. So it's the old catch-22 of how do I get government experience unless I have government experience? And that's where it becomes a challenge. So unless you're going to buy a company that has government contracts, and by the way, people use our site to identify acquisition opportunities or to learn about companies that they might acquire. Unless you buy a company, then that's the other way in, is by just picking off these contracts that maybe no one else wants.
But it doesn't take long. Right. You showed us student loans, you showed us the court debt, you mentioned utilities and Section 8. What other types of debt are available out there for possible contracts?
So right now I went to the filters that are specific to debt collection. And every time a contract enters our system, we tag it with one or more of 24 different account types. And four of them are healthcare, four of them are student loan related or higher ed related. Pardon me. And then there's everything else from taxes to utility bills and right on down the line. And all of that's searchable in different areas of the site. So if you want to look up pricing for library fines, you can do that. Or what's coming out for bid for student loans, you can do that.
I'm curious if there's any impact from the current federal government shutdown, if that's having any impact either on new contracts or current contracts, or if there's any insight that you might be able to share on that topic.
Well, in our industry, the vast majority of contracts are at the state and local level, so it's had very little effect at the state and local. And, you know, so they're putting out their bids. Their bids, regardless of what is or isn't happening in DC by and large.
Sure. Okay. How many, you said you have, was it 200 to 300 available sort of during the course of the year, new contracts that come up for bid?
So, yeah, in an average year, it's going to be 250 to 300. In certain years, maybe just because certain types, certain contracts are maybe, you know, maybe there were more contracts in 2014 and they all come out in 2019. So there might be a bump in a given year for that reason. But that tends to be the average. And there's always more activity this time of year now through the beginning of summer. And then once we get into summer, we're in the dog days The numbers fall off a little bit. It doesn't go away completely, but you know, maybe 25% fewer at that time of year than the beginning part of the year. Picks up again in the fall and then drops off next to nothing in December.
Got it. So we mentioned price. We mentioned previous government collection experience. We mentioned, you know, being a veteran or minority or women-owned business as possible factors that might impact the awarding of a contract. Is there anything else that collection agencies should be playing up in their bids or emphasizing in their bids to help them, you know, win a procurement?
Compliance. I think that's industry-wide. People love reading about technology and people love reading bios, but at the end of the day, they're almost as concerned about the compliance angle as any other thing, including how much you actually collect for them. So they'd rather collect less and have zero complaints than collect more and have a few. Let's put it that way.
So they're looking at how many complaints either at the, you know, with the state attorney general or with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, how many lawsuits have been filed against you? I'm sure they're asking a lot of questions about what compliance systems and policies and procedures are in place. Is that right?
They're in every bid, they will ask those kinds of questions in different ways. So in some cases, they're asking specifically about numbers of complaints or numbers of lawsuits. And in others, they're asking open-ended questions. Tell us what you do to ensure compliance. But I think we're at the point where it's just never, it's always included in the bid in some shape or form.
Is it possible to use the same template or the same bid proposal from one agreement to the next for the most part?
Generally not. Generally, what you really need to do is either have really good records of what you've written so that you can easily access that information, or compile it into a central document or documents so that all of your technology content is in one place and you're updating that maybe two or three times a year. But by and large, it's very hard to template the bid process. I like to say that, you know, in any bid, you might have written 75% of it, and that might take you, a day to put together. But that remaining 25% that has never been asked before is most of the work that you have to do to complete the bid.
Every bid is a snowflake.
Yeah, there you go. So go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. I was just gonna ask one more question. I'm curious. With all of the data you have there, especially as it relates to pricing, have you noticed any trends in terms of, you know, whether pricing is going up or down for either in general or within certain types of debt?
You know, it's interesting. You could do that analysis with our data, but anytime I ever talk to a client who's interested in a contract, and occasionally it happens when they ask me, what do I think? We are then hyper-focused on what happened with that contract. So we look at the micro and not the macro. So although you could mine our data and learn that, generally when people are accessing the data, it's for the micro information and not the macro.
Got it.
But I did want to say, and this is really our call to action for this call, that I want to remind everyone, although we have premium services where people have unlimited access to data, that if they contact me between now and Friday, first of all, you can create a free account at any time, whether you contact me or not. But if you contact me by Friday, we're going to give you a promo code that will give you credits on the site. So even if you want to use the site a la carte, that promo code would let you download information about one specific opportunity at the local level. So for example, if you wanted to see everything we knew about Grand Rapids, Michigan, if you create a free account on our site and contact me, I can give you a promo code, and then you could download the history we have on that particular RFP. And so I have two questions.
See, I knew if one, I talked long enough, some people would start asking questions.
And I appreciate that. So one question, are agencies required to be SSAE 18 SOC 1 Type 2 audited? Yes and no. The yes part of the answer is that occasionally, maybe, I don't know, 2 out of 100, they will specifically say, do you have this? And they might either make it a requirement, or it's very obvious that they want to see that you had that. But even if they don't ask that question, to the extent that you would always use that as a differentiator, you should mention it every time. And then in terms of a sample debt collection RFP, someone is asking, do we have a sample debt collection RFP? If you create a free account on the site and tell us your preference is debt collection using the wizard when you sign up, then you will be able to see the debt collection RFPs that are out for bid right now, and you can download the RFP itself. So from that standpoint, if you create a free account, you have instantaneous access to the couple of dozen that are out for bid right now.
Excellent. Well, I'll give people one last chance, anyone listening, to type in a question, and I'll do that by asking you one last question. So, you know, you said this is the busy time. It's tax, you know, but it's also tax season for a lot of these agencies. So I'm curious, you know, how would you convince an agency to commit the resources needed to, you know, to win one of these deals or go after one of these deals at the expense of maybe, you know, not at the expense of sort of, you know, putting some of the effort toward you know, going after, you know, individuals' income tax returns?
So is the question around resources to respond to the bid now?
Yeah.
Okay. It's always a challenge to put bids together, but if you want to break into this market, the only way you can do that is by realizing that developing bid responses is part of the cost of doing business. And for the micro-sized companies, that is you. For the average small collection agency, let's say up to 30 people, that is a combination of ownership plus salespeople plus operations. And then as you get beyond that, you might have a person, part of that person's job might be responding to bids. And then as you get much larger than that, the largest companies will have a small team of people who just respond to bids. So it is part of the cost of doing business, but the main thing is that having access to the right information ensures you don't waste thousands and thousands or tens of thousands of dollars every year bidding on contracts but because of a lack of information, which is what you want to avoid. Another question about the cost of the program. So the pay-as-you-go model, using credits on the site, you could spend zero up to anything you want by buying credits on the site and applying them to access different types of information about different contracts. We do have annual programs, and I think the most expensive one we have is about $8,000 per year, and that's for the largest companies that are really looking at everything. And then we have regional programs or market-specific programs that are in the $4,000 to $5,000 range per year. But there's nothing preventing anyone from creating a free account at any time and trying it, at least initially, by using credit.
Excellent. Well, I think that's all the questions we've got right now. Nick, is there anything else you wanted to go over before we start wrapping things up?
No, I just wanted to say thank you, Mike, for setting this up. We're happy to be a sponsor. We love to have the opportunity to talk to people on your mailing list. And I'd like to thank everyone who attended today's teleseminar.
We did have a question on how somebody can contact you for the promo code.
Well, that's a great question. So the best way to contact me would be by phone. And let me just put it on the screen and I will read it aloud as well. So my number is 267-471-9591. And that is a direct dial to me. And you can also, if you create an account on the site and then go through the Contact Us tool, I think some of our support people have access to that. And if you reference this demo and that you want the code, you know, I would follow up and get you that.
Excellent. Well, before I let everyone go, I want to thank Nick for his time and his insights today. This webinar would not have been possible without his participation. Really appreciate him going into such detail about this opportunity for the ARM industry, because I agree with him that I think that there is a significant opportunity here for anyone that's willing to make the investment. So thanks to him and thanks to MyGovWatch.com for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.MyGovWatch.com to learn more about the company and to sign up for the free account Nick mentioned. Thanks to everybody who participated today and asked questions. Please stay tuned to AccountsRecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of the day. Nick, thanks a lot for joining us. We look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, Mike. Have a good day.
Take care, everybody.